Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social.
This is CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Paris, the city of light. Paris, the center of the world for people in Europe for several centuries. Paris today is a political city, beautiful to look at and to live in. And, of course, it's very romantic, but it comes from somewhere medieval. And I have someone to help us understand the transformation of Paris into the beauty of today, remembering that a city is the greatest creation of civilization. It represents all the people who've lived there, all the people who want to live there, a city. And this is a special city. Tyler Turman, a recent alumnus of the Acton Institute's Emerging Leaders Program, writing for Civitas Outlook at Civitas Institute, the University of Texas at Austin, about where Paris came from. Tyler, congratulations and good evening. You present a Paris that doesn't look livable. You call it medieval. What did Paris look like before the transformation of the late 19th century? Good evening to you.
Thank you so much, John. I'm happy to be here, and I'm looking forward to discussing my article with you. So to answer your question, Paris by 1848, by the Second French Revolution, was basically a far cry from the city that it is today. And even Napoleon I sort of recognized that many decades earlier, where he remarked that if the heavens had given me 20 more years, one would very scarcely and vainly search for the old Paris, nothing but remember it, but vestiges. And so Napoleon III, in many ways, wanted to carry on his great uncle's legacy. And so Paris at the time was a city that was overcrowded with disease, squalor, and poverty. Paris's population had basically doubled from 1850 up until 1850, but the city had basically undergone no significant expansion to house a new population. And so there are over a third of the city's 1 million inhabitants who are basically living in an area not even twice the size of Central Park. And so the city's narrow streets basically meant that there were entire neighborhoods that not only almost got no sunlight, but there was also very little air circulation, which of course was a breeding ground for a lot of diseases. Paris was the host of two different bouts of cholera that killed upwards of 40,000 residents prior to 1848. There were sewage and waste all over the streets. There were slums all around the city center, which led to two separate bouts of cholera, like I mentioned before. But it was also the home of two major revolutions in 1830 and 1848. And it was a political hotbed, basically, because of how deplorable the conditions were for the working class. And so it also led to the famous emergence of many of the barricades that we see in musicals like Les Miserables, for example, because the streets are so narrow, which made it very difficult for troops to be able to quell rebellions. And so this was the city that Napoleon III was sort of inheriting when he became emperor. And many people were not content with the status quo, which is precisely what inspired Napoleon and later on Haussmann to embark on the project of remaking Paris.
Did they connect the epidemics or the miserable lives of people who coughed themselves to death? Did they connect that to the city? Did they understand how the city was creating sickness?
Absolutely. So Napoleon essentially weaponized public health for the sake of suiting his political ends. He famously called it, amongst other Parisian residents at the time, they called it a Jacobin illness because of how working class residents were packed into these major urban centers in the center of Paris, which, of course, was the breeding ground for many diseases. And so in many ways, he used his urban renewal project and also connected that with public health and used it as leverage to justify his slum clearance and pointing out there are many people with diseases. These streets are overcrowded. It's a dirty, dangerous city, not safe to live in. It's unlivable, which is precisely why we need to tear down the old Paris and rebuild it. So in many ways, public health was a major political tool for Napoleon to suit his propaganda campaign to justify his projects.
All right. A man named Charles Louis Napoleon, who makes himself emperor, self-proclaimed, just like his relative, in 1848. Here we have a revolution across the continent. We have everybody moving around, including Karl Marx. And we have a new emperor who has an idea. How did Napoleon III, come to the idea that he could remake the city? Who told him?
So actually, he had the ambition way back when he was a child because he grew up and lived in Paris prior to Napoleon's abdication. So he, in many respects, also saw the Paris that many other people saw at the time as well. But he, from the very early stages of his life after Napoleon's abdication, the first abdication after his disastrous defeat at the Battle of Waterloo, basically anticipated that he was a sort of chosen person. He was a person of destiny who was bound to reshape the world in his image in a way like to his uncle, except while his uncle basically dominated with military conquest, Napoleon sought to leave behind a lasting urban legacy with Paris. And so he had the idea of basically rebuilding Paris when he was in prison after a second coup d'etat against the French government basically ended in failure and landed him in a French prison originally for life. And so he once proclaimed that he wanted to be a second Augustus because Augustus built Rome and made into a city of marble. And so in many ways, urban planners for centuries before were also hoping to build Paris and make it reminiscent of Rome, as many other medieval kings across Europe are striving to do. And so in many ways, Napoleon saw that there was an issue with Paris, and he saw it as an opportunity to leave behind a lasting legacy that would endure after his death.
So he was inspired by Roman stories. Augustus, that was the fundamental. If Augustus can do it, I can do it. Is that too simple a formula?
Oh, that was definitely a major factor. And in fact, many of Paris's urban renewal programs and its architectural style, it was called Haussmannization, was inspired by a Roman urban planning in many ways. There's this rectilinear, grid-like, systematic planning in which each individual building is treated not on its own, but as a sort of piece of a greater whole. And of course, he also recognized the importance of public attractions and monuments and major public areas for, I suppose, enjoyment and tourism played a crucial role in facilitating, I suppose, civil discourse, but also unity in sort of recognizing that people can unify around these major monuments like the Arc de Triomphe, for example, or the Opera House. And so they became sort of cultural symbols for Paris that sort of in many ways separated from other cities as a sort of cultural hub for all of France, but also for all of Europe, which is why Paris in many ways today is sort of one of the major tourist attractions. And so Napoleon recognized that. And in many ways, he was inspired by Rome.
Napoleon III needed an architect, an urban architect. That's what we call it today. What do we need to know about Baron Georges Eugene Haussmann? Where did he come from?
So Haussmann's family actually goes back a few generations with the Bonaparte family. His grandfather was a general in Napoleon Bonaparte's army under the first French emperor. He studied music and law in Paris. Both him and his father fought in the 1830 revolution. And so it was after the revolution that he began his political career. He was secretary general in 1831 and deputy prefect in 1832. But he built up a reputation as very skilled and capable administrator and representative, but he was also very notorious for his hot temper and impertinence, which naturally alienated him from many of his co-workers. It made him a bit of a divisive figure in French politics that prevented him from being promoted to prefect. But after the 1848 revolution, that's when Haussmann's career began to really take off, because after Napoleon's rise to the presidency, he met Napoleon, and shortly thereafter, the two became very good friends. And after Napoleon's coup, he was looking for a new prefect to assist him with rebuilding Paris, because the old prefect was in many ways sort of dragging his feet, and Napoleon grew incredibly frustrated with the incredibly sluggish and bureaucratic approach of the French that the French monarchy had under King Louis-Philippe. And so Napoleon recounted, well, there's nothing that I can really do about this, especially as president, when you have democratic institutions that sort of deter autocratic and unilateral authority. And so he wanted a new prefect to basically help execute his vision and turn it into boulevards, bridges, and turn into reality. And so Haussmann was actually a bit of an anomaly, because he wasn't much of an architect or an urban planner prior to being prefect. He lacked some of the expertise that other potential builders had before him. But what he lacked in experience, in many ways, he made up for in ambition and vision. And so when Napoleon's minister met Haussmann, he remarked that he had met one of the most extraordinary men of the time. And so when Napoleon met Haussmann, I would like to imagine that he saw someone who was both a political ally, given his family's history, someone who was very outspoken and eloquent and highly intelligent, but I suppose most importantly, a man who is incredibly ambitious. And I think Napoleon, in many ways, found a man after his own heart when he met Haussmann. And so he chose Haussmann as his right-hand man, and together the two embarked on their 17-year-long public works projects to remake Paris.
We're about to level the medieval city. Tyler Turman, writing for Civitas Outlook at Civitas Institute. When we come back, Haussmannization. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.